thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Boing. Here's John Williams.
A little sound goes off whenever I have a big thought. You don't hear it that often, do you? It's 107. This is John. I'm in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3. Then Ro Khan and Anna DeVlanta stroll in with a whole bunch of people and fancy racks of equipment. Oh, they do a great show. We'll tide things over until then. By the way, Kim, you're still in the news box there before you swap seats with Steve Bertrand. Were you at all interested in our grayscaling your phone conversation yesterday?
That put me into a panic. It just really made my palms sweat thinking about doing that. Yeah. I don't think I could handle it. How are you doing?
I did it, and it's annoying.
But are you going back?
No, I'm not, because I think it's slowly working, and I want to give it its full chance to break me of my cell phone habits.
What's your deadline?
Good question. I don't have one, but for most of us, it's not like that. It's more like, how long can you hold your breath and you don't know?
Right.
Violetta, how long did you last before you switched your phone back?
I think it was exactly close to 24 hours.
Elif went 7 hours. Bertrand went about a day. I'm still doing it, but now I think it's
And I'm not even trying.
I know. Well, there's the range. And I'm doing it, I think, now just to be obnoxious. But
yeah, I think so.
Thank you for that. So here's what happens. All of us are addicted to the colors, shapes, and imagery of our smartphones, all of those apps, all of those functions. And it's by design. It's no coincidence that you love it and are pulled into it. There's a series of buttons you can hit under settings in your phone to change it so that it looks more grayscale, more penciled, and it's drab and blah, and it looks broke, but it fully functions.
It just feels lifeless.
It totally does. It totally changes the, I don't know.
It feels like no point. It's like, why even open my phone?
And it's like, listen, I'm a guy who's addicted to his phone, so...
Go back, John. It's so nice. There's so many vibrant colors, and you know, can see the text messages back and forth.
It's sort of like I'm a guy who quit drinking, and you're standing outside the saloon going, come on back.
We're having whiskey.
Don't be a quitter.
What? You're enabling him.
Ta-da.
Yes, but if I'm doing it, I want you to do it so that it doesn't feel so bad that I'm doing it.
Exactly. This is, boy, insert cocaine, alcohol, tobacco.
Right.
Pornography. I don't know what other things people get addicted to.
I could do that by myself.
but this is the very same thing. And so I'm trying. And so then I turned to my friend Kim Gordon, who I know has a problem. And I said, hey, Kim, I'm on the path to sobriety. Why don't you come to this meeting with me? And you guys won't even slow the car down for her to get in.
No, I don't encourage
you. We're driving off.
I know.
We're on a heist.
But it is kind of funny to me that you all are now resenting, you know, my path. Yeah, I'll tell you what. If I shut up about it, you guys will be okay with me doing it, right?
No, I want you to change back to color.
You know, because here's why. Because it was so much fun, John. We'd all go drinking, and we would all have so much fun, and we'd party. And now you don't party with us anymore, and so...
You don't post on your social media. I don't see any pictures on Instagram.
That would be so true. I mean, this is the very conversation. Somebody needs to study this. This is exactly the conversation. Yeah, you don't come to the parties anymore. Well, I don't. Because why? Because my phone is drab. Because that's the conscious...
You're not getting the text messages because you can't tell between. And that's why you're not going to the parties.
And I don't post. And it's just not as much fun to follow me now. And so on and so forth.
I still have the toggle function set on my phone where if you click the home screen 3 times, that it switches back to grayscale.
Yeah, I haven't done that. And you know why? It's because I think it would be too easy. I would just I mean, really, have you quit drinking if you just drink a little bit? No. I'm going to stop drinking.
And each time I accidentally triple tap the home screen and it goes back to grayscale, I scream inside.
Oh. Well, so if you want to know how to do that, to at least see what we're talking about, including the shortcut, Elif reposted on the original post about this on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. I believe it's a couple of posts down. You'll pretty easily find it. It's a step-by-step from Elif on how to permanently or temporarily grayscale your phone.
Well, actually, it was given to us by someone named Carrie, a listener of yours named Carrie.
Oh, the shortcut, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John, if you continued this, do you think that you would change your phone to a flip phone or something that's not a smartphone because you don't need a smartphone anymore?
That's the direction I'm trying to go, but I don't want to go that far. I still want to be able to like drink champagne on New Year's Eve and
it's
Thanksgiving
funny though,
and Christmas.
You're starting to dress a little more drably.
Why would I care about my appearance if the pictures appear in black and white?
I guess so.
If the federal government shuts down, what does that mean? If this was San Diego or Washington, D.C., or Portsmouth, I think these are all towns that are very much tied to military and military spending. I think the conversation would really be important to people right now. If you're a federal employee and tomorrow at midnight, the government shuts down, quote unquote, you don't get paid, right? I'm interested in what your thought reaction to this story is. Are you a federal employee, and what happens to you if at midnight the government shuts down? That'll be tomorrow night, Saturday at 12:01 a.m. We just don't have, you know, we've got Great Lakes. There's federal employees scattered throughout the city and country, but I don't think it's a big part of the Chicago population. But if you are, I'm just curious what you think will happen. The president said because of the Democrats not being interested in life and safety, DACA has now taken a big step backwards. The Dems will threaten shutdown. But what they are really doing is shutting down our military at a time we need it most. Get smart. Make America great again. Capital letters, exclamation point.
Just remember, DACA was up and running fine until he issued an executive order to stop it. Yeah. So if he wanted to save DACA, he could issue another executive order, reversing his previous order, and keep it going as long as he's in office.
Well, he wants to change the bill that would include DACA to make it a little more restrictive. The people from some countries, it's and which, by the way, I read today, is almost seen as a racial or a culturally insensitive way to describe that chain immigration.
A lot of African Americans, their ancestors.
Family unification is what they prefer you call it, but it's.
So the idea is that if you're here legally, then your family members there have a leg up on coming here.
I think tomorrow we're going to talk to the wife of that guy from Detroit who was sent packing. You know, he'd improperly followed procedures. He came here when he was 10 years old. He's now about 40. He's been a productive, functioning, married man in Detroit area. He's got kids. They go to school. They speak with the same accent you and I do. They look Hispanic. And it finally caught up with him. And so he was at the airport a couple days ago with his family crying. And this man had to fly to Mexico. And he's going to spend the next year and a half trying to get his stuff right so that he can come back. Meantime, he doesn't have his job. Meantime, his family suffers economically. I don't know. Will they be on some sort of public dole as a result? This one guy is not the problem, but he's an example of what we're doing here. And what we're doing here is not having a clear policy. You know, I get a little annoyed when they show one tearful family that pulls at our heartstrings, and then we all go, oh, this is terrible. Well, you know, the administration would be happy to show you some gangbangers being rounded up and sent out of here, and we would be more happy about that. So showing one story, I don't think, is a very good representation of something this complicated. But it is a true story. The president says this will shut down the military. Literally, he said, the Dems will threaten shutdown, but what they're really doing is shutting down our military at a time when we need it most. PolitiFact looked into this. They write, when we checked with the White House, they said that Trump wasn't using the term literally. So whenever the president says something, if you quote the president verbatim, the White House is always happy to tell you, well, but that's not what we meant or said. In fact, in other tweets, Trump used less sweeping language. In one, for instance, he warned against the moves that would stop paying our troops and government workers. And a government shutdown, the likes of which we might see tomorrow at midnight, would stop paying active duty troops. If you have a son or daughter who's a soldier, they will almost certainly have to continue to stand their ground. The ships will still sail, the troops will still have bullets and food, and they will continue to hold their positions. It doesn't change their action, but it changes their wallet. It says here, PolitiFact, one way that active duty troops could feel the shutdown is in their wallets. Employees who are required to work, that would be your active duty military, are not paid until a new spending bill is passed, effectively working for free, at least temporarily. What a shameful thing we do to our members of our military. Workers who are furloughed have historically been compensated for back pay, though through subsequent congressional action, though there is no requirement that such a bill be passed. In 2013, the Office of Management and Budget estimated $2.5 billion in pay and benefits was paid for hours not worked government-wide. So they did pay people back, but they don't have to. And you know, I don't know how you live, but I think most of us, if we miss a paycheck, we feel that today, that impact, then we will be late for our car payment, or we will not take the vacation, or we will not buy the shoes, or we will not buy the chicken. It will impact people immediately, particularly members of the military who don't make much money. If you're in the services, you're not getting paid much. Thank you for your service, and we're good for it. Trust me on this. We'll catch you later. God, it would really suck for you if you were in Illinois, a federal employee in Illinois, because, you know, you may have a winning lottery ticket. We don't pay that on time. And if you did work for the state, you might get paid in a year. And if you work for the federal government, you might not get paid at all. If you have a federal paycheck, I'd just be interested in you telling me what's going to happen to you. It's 119. 135, Michael Eisen, a professor of infectious diseases at Northwestern, talks to us about the flu. We are at, what do they call it when you have a widespread flu?
Epidemic?
Yes, we are at epidemic standards right now. They have this color-coded map, a heat map for the flu in the United States. This is the first time ever since they've been doing this that the whole map is the same color. And the color is, you know, red, whatever the worst condition is. Every state in the union is now under the full-scale press that the flu is. They say it's not too late to get the flu shot, that the season could last 13 more weeks. I don't think I know anybody directly who had the flu, but I hear it's really bad. It's 119. My number is 312-981-7200. If you're one of those employees who won't get paid. Also, there's an interesting article in the Chicago Sun Crimes today. I'm just looking over it again. It's got a picture of former Governor Blagojevich, blue jeans, black shirt, black sport coat, awesome hair, but looks goofy. And the headline is, it's a viewpoint by an attorney in Chicago. Leaked recordings reveal Rod's honest intentions, which is a conversation we've been having a little bit on and a little bit off the air. Those ads for Rauner right now, which make J.B. Pritzker look real bad, where he's conniving with the governor. The governor's conniving, and J.B.'s just abetting him. But they say, if you listen to all of the tapes, and the government cherry-picked it to make its case, and we have not had or heard all of those tapes. Now that we are getting, I guess, a better listen to more of them, Blagojevich's intentions weren't so bad, said this piece. I'm sure Patty would like you to know that. It's 122. This week on Chicago's Best, move over. The cow is king. It's an all-new Chicago's Best Beef, and that's this Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their family medicine clinic, at their speech-language institute, physical therapy institute, dental and eye institutes. At these clinics, you get quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Find out more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic is your family's home for healthcare. Steve Bertrand has the news in 6 minutes. One of the members of the National Park Service Board who quit in a huff joins us after 2. Tom, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What's on your mind?
Hi, John. I just wanted to reemphasize your struggle with the graying of your computer or your phone.
Yeah.
the first bridge that anybody needs to get over is 30 days. Anybody can put up with it for a couple, three, 4 days. It's annoying. But if it's still annoying at 30 days, then you can probably go back, unless you're trying to really change a bad behavior like drinking, drugs, you know, all the other things that you talked about.
I'm sorry, what's your expertise on this?
My graduate works in industrial psychology, so I've had a few psych courses. And I've given this advice over time, and it seems to
Sure, it makes sense. But I'm sorry, are you speaking about the grayscale of the phone per se, or addictions or bad habits generally?
Generally.
So, I mean, right.
For
so,
example, if I have a thing about potato chips. I don't need them. I don't really like them. But for some reason, I like to dive into a bag of potato chips. I give them up for 30 days, and I still am annoyed by the fact that I can't have a potato chip, and I'm going to go back and get a bag of potato chips. But and I'm being a little silly, but yes, you changing behavior doesn't happen right away.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I'm trying to tell my friends here who have all plowed back into the corner saloon. And I'm like, guys, just wait, because here's what I think will happen. It's really super annoying now. We're all jonesing for the color of our screens. But that in time, you will realize that you are happier without the color. Doesn't happen now because you miss it. You're hooked on it. But in time, maybe we'll go, wow, I'm so glad I finally beat the color font habit. Steve Bertrand, your witness.
No.
Violetta, your thoughts.
No, you're just going to end up having no connection to it, and I don't really want to have no connection to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness gracious. Would I like to have an extended conversation about that?
But I just think that's so interesting. Tom, I'm going to go. Thanks for the call. But don't you guys find this at least illustrative? This illustrates exactly what people who are addicted to things must go through on a small scale?
Well, it's like saying, I like chips, but then if you bake the chips, take the salt out of the chips and make them lifeless,
yeah,
I don't like chips anymore. So yeah, if you take the color and all the most of the functionality that's fun on your phone out of it, then yeah, you're not going to like your phone anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to do. And we're being a little facetious about this because obviously a phone isn't heroin, and it's not the same thing. It's okay to go back to your phone. But at least the pangs of trying to break away from a habit like this is kind of what you guys sound like you're going through.
I can't wait until you switch back.
I'm telling you, it's like it's...
I know. Describe that moment, Steve. Tell us what happened.
It was like Dorothy landing in Oz. You know, the first part of the movie's in black and white.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, these colors, like I told you, it was like the first time I dropped LSD.
You have not done that.
Right. But the colors were, it was beautiful. It was really odd how pretty the phone was. It really was. I was kind of surprised by that.
Some of the texters are saying this. John, his family was on The View today, and that was heartbreaking. That's the family in Detroit. The father had to be exported to Mexico because of an immigration issue. It was a really sad story. 30 years with his family here in the United States. He's about 40, came here when he was 10. John, why didn't that person do the citizenship classes when he was in high school? John, go figure. These other country citizens can dream in their own country and then apply to enter our country legally. What a concept. John, how about the Russian women having anchor babies while staying at a Trump facility in Florida? He railed against this frequently before and during the 2016 campaign. And this texter said, would a military shutdown affect his ability to go to Mar-a-Lago? I don't know, maybe. See, Bertram, I enjoy your conversation here. And I also like talking to you when we do our Mincing Rascals podcast. We recorded it today with Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for the Tribune, and Eric Zorn, who columns for the Chicago Tribune. Zorn on the left, Stantis on the right. Steve and I fill out the middle spaces, and it's a pretty interesting conversation. In that conversation today, which you'll be able to hear at 5 this evening, we talked a lot about the state and the city and some of the federal stuff that's going on, too. I referred to the woman that President Trump may or may not have had an affair with as Montana Wild Hack. Her name is known as Stormy Daniels. Do you know who Montana Wild Hack is?
I do not.
Pretty sure she was the woman who was an adult film star from another planet in a Kurt Vonnegut book. I think it was Slaughterhouse-Five. And I think in Slaughterhouse-Five on the planet Quag, there was a woman who was a porn star or an adult film star, and she was Montana Wild Hack.
And that has stayed with you all these years?
It's the best name, Montana Wild Hack. Isn't that a great name?
What's the real one's name? What's
Stormy
the
real one? Stormy Daniels.
The real one's fake name? Stormy Daniels.
The real fake name is Stormy Daniels, mm. Yeah. So if you're listening to the podcast and think, oh, that was weird, at least that's what I was doing when I did that.
So are you defending the podcast before it's even released?
I'm actually selling the podcast. Oh. And you'll be able to hear that wherever you listen to your finer podcasts. I hope you do, and I hope you share it with your friends. And we'd like your feedback, too. Questions, comments, topics?
I feel like Scott Standis was kind of picked on today.
I
picked on him in the beginning.
Well, I did something at the end of the podcast that I actually thought, if I apologize to him for this, then it will take away what I've just done, and I shouldn't have to apologize for what I did. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He said something that I thought was inappropriate. I know he was characterizing somebody else, but the way he put it I thought was wrong and callous. And so I've never done that before, in public or private. I said,
how did it feel?
It felt really sanctimonious, and I didn't like it.
I was going to say, it felt really unlike you.
If you correct somebody, hey, that's not how we talk now. You don't use that word. You don't use that phrase. I don't want to hear that in my presence. Sort of like, who was it when Trump used the word? Was it Mitch Daniels? No, or Mitch McConnell? Who was it at that meeting that said I stood up to the president?
Lindsey Graham.
So I don't know what that was like for Lindsey Graham. And Scott Stanis isn't the president of the United States. He and I are on equal footing. If anything, he's higher up the food chain than I am. But it felt heavy-handed. And yet it also, I thought, we're all sitting here accepting this, use of this word, and I would not use that word, ever. And I wouldn't use it that way. So I called him on it. And then he kind of chuckled, but I think he was trying to figure out if I was being serious or not.
Well, I was too. I wasn't sure.
I wasn't either. Well, I was sincere, but then I could have played it for a laugh, but I didn't because I didn't feel that. I don't know. When you listen to the podcast, you'll hear, yeah, listen to me. I used Montana Wild Hack, and then Stannis said something that maybe I should have kept my mouth shut. I don't know.
This is very intriguing.
It's The Mincing Rascals. It'll be up at 5. It's 1:39. By the way, Violetta, was there one other thing you were going to chime in here before we moved on? Was there something else I asked you about? Evidently not.
I don't believe so.
Here's what I wanted you to do. You know that app that Google has now where you take a picture from your camera roll or you take a selfie of yourself and then it does a side-by-side of you and somebody in art history, a famous painting. If you look like Mona Lisa, it'll put up the Mona Lisa.
God, I hope I don't look like the Mona Lisa.
So it's really interesting, and it is under the Google, what's it called? The app, the Google Arts and Culture. I've been trying to do it, but I can't seem to work it.
Okay, so you want me to help you see what artwork you look like?
Yes, Google Arts and Culture. Would you mess around with that app?
Yes.
It's free, and if you figure it out, let me know.
Okay, and if it's not free, I'll charge you for it.
Fair enough. It's 140. I want to talk about the flu that's going around. Boy, I sure hope you don't get it. I hear that if you do, it's really bad. And on a phone line is Dr. Michael Eisen. Doctor, this is John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate your patience with all of that. We had to get a couple things out of the way.
No problem.
How bad would you say is the flu in the Chicago area?
Well, we definitely are in a period where we're seeing very high levels of flu circulation in the community. Every year, there is a epidemic of influenza that affects the Chicagoland area as well as most parts of the United States. This typically occurs sometime between November and April each year, the peak occurring usually around this time of the year, which it is now.
Would you say, Doctor, that it's, and by the way, Dr. Michael Eisen is a professor of infectious diseases at Northwestern Medicine. Is it too late to get the flu shot?
It's definitely not too late to get the flu shot, and there's a lot of reasons to get it if you haven't. Number one, the flu shot protects you against influenza A and influenza B. And typically in flu seasons, the influenza A occurs earlier in the flu season, as we're seeing now. But a second B wave typically occurs around the time that the students are going for spring break. So getting the vaccine now could not only prevent influenza A, but also influenza B. Additionally, it's been clearly shown that even if you acquire influenza after you've gotten the flu shot, the likelihood that you get very sick, need hospitalization, or even die is reduced in those patients that have gotten the flu vaccine. So even if you get sick from the flu, it can help prevent you from getting very sick from the infection. So it's something we still recommend.
What do you say about this? I read that 30%, it's only 30% effective this year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the current vaccine technologies that we use do sometimes result in years where the vaccine component in the vaccine is not as effective in preventing initial infection. But as I mentioned, even if you get the flu and you've had the flu vaccine that season, you're less likely to become severely ill, require hospitalization, or die. And so there's still a benefit, even if it doesn't prevent you from getting sick. Mm-hmm. And many of those patients that have gotten the vaccine may have a milder illness than those patients who have not been vaccinated.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I thought it was an on-off switch. You got it or you don't. It's possible I would get it, but it would be less severe?
Correct. And that's one of the main advantages of the flu vaccine, particularly if there's not a great match. The other thing is that the vaccine, although it may not be a great match for the H3 component of the circulating strains, appears to be a good, better match for H1 and the B strains. And so, again, gives you great protection for those other viruses as well.
Do you get is the word vaccinated or inoculated? What do you call it?
Yeah, vaccinated.
Do you get vaccinated with a shot? And how do you recommend people do that?
So basically, they can either see their physician in their physician's clinic, or a much easier way that many people may have an easier time accessing is through their local pharmacy. Many pharmacies are able to offer the vaccine, and many times that's paid for by the insurance and may cost them nothing to very few dollars based on their insurance. And they can just ask the pharmacist if they give the vaccine. If they do, they can give it. If not, they can tell you a pharmacy close by that would be able to help them out.
It's the same stuff at the doctor's office or at the county medical facilities or Walgreens? It's the same stuff?
Yep. Same vaccine everywhere. So basically, it doesn't matter whether you're getting it at a pharmacy, a health department, or a doctor's office. It's going to be the exact same vaccine.
Is there anybody that shouldn't get the vaccine?
Individuals that have true anaphylactic reaction to eggs, but people that basically have an intolerance and are able to eat egg-containing foods, it's not a problem at all. Additionally, patients that have gotten a rare disease called Guillain-Barré syndrome from the flu vaccine shouldn't get the flu vaccine. But that's probably all totaled less than 1% of the population.
I knew somebody with Guillain-Barré and never asked how they got it. It didn't seem to be appropriate. Is it possible they got it from a vaccine?
Although it is possible, most cases of Guillain-Barré are not related to the influenza vaccine at all.
Pregnant women can take it. People that are using other medications can use it. That is, take the vaccine.
Yeah. Basically, the influenza vaccine is recommended in every adult and child over 6 months of age, unless they have that egg allergy that's severe or have Guillain-Barré. So pretty much everyone should. And then there are some higher priority groups, those that have underlying medical condition, those that are morbidly obese, those that are very young or very old, and pregnant women who clearly have a higher risk of developing severe influenza if they do get sick with it.
I suppose people would be lining up more if they thought they had a better than 30% chance, your point notwithstanding about the shades of gray, but I think they would be happier to do it if they thought the number wasn't 30%. Can you talk to me about how they pick the strains and how far out in advance they have to sort of forecast what a given flu season will be?
Yeah, that's really the main challenge for the entire world at this point. So basically what happens is several groups around the country, including our Centers for Disease Control, collect a subset of samples of patients with influenza, and they look at those to decide which virus is circulating throughout the world at that time. In March, they have a meeting for the Northern Hemisphere vaccine in Geneva, where they talk through all of that data and decide which virus is going going into the vaccine for the following years. It takes about 6 months from that decision until we have enough vaccine that we can vaccinate the entire U.S. Population. And unfortunately, over that time period, sometimes there are changes in the virus that's circulating such that the vaccine strain that's selected isn't necessarily a great match. And this year, there's some evidence to suggest that the virus may have changed a little bit over time, perhaps as part of the vaccine production process that made it a little less protective against the circulating strain of influenza. Mm-hmm. That being said, as I said before, even if you get sick from the infection, I would think that I'd want the vaccine if I knew that it was something that would reduce me from having to get into the hospital if I did get the flu, and more importantly, prevent me from dying.
By the way, there was two now cases of the measles going through O'Hare, which didn't surprise me. Measles is not that uncommon, right? And O'Hare is a big place.
Correct.
I wonder how they knew that two cases of the measles went through O'Hare and what the danger is to people that have gone through it.
Yeah. So, you know, the way that they discovered that this was the case was that the patient basically didn't know that they had measles when they were going through the airport, but subsequently was diagnosed with measles. They then, through the health department, have tried to alert the public for people that were present in the airport at the time. Unfortunately, I don't have the press release right up here about what the specific dates were, but patients that were or individuals that were in the airport on one of the dates that the traveler passed through O'Hare should be on the lookout for fever, respiratory symptoms, or rash, and if so, they should seek care with their doctor.
Yeah, sure. But if I've had the measles before or was vaccinated against that, then I don't have to worry. Is that also true?
It reduces your risk. Part of the challenge is that some individuals that have been vaccinated may lose the protective antibody for influenza. And so as a result, even if you've been vaccinated, there's a much lower risk that you develop measles. Again, a lot of it depends if you got the full series, if you missed doses, and whether or not you've had more recent booster doses.
Can this flu kill you? I hear that it's just a whole six-pack of whoop-ass, this particular flu this year.
Yeah, so they're basically
That's not a medical term, by the way.
It is not, but it's capturing the key point. So there's basically two types of influenza A that commonly circulate, influenza H3N2, which is what we're seeing this year, which tends to be associated with more severe disease, more hospitalization, and higher rates of death. The one that people hear a lot about is H1N1, which is associated with the 2009 pandemic. And while, as we saw with the pandemic, this can also cause severe illness and death in those individuals, typically is a little less severe. And so I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing so many people getting so sick, and we're seeing reports of deaths at relatively high rates around the country.
If you get it, you got to ride it out. Is that it?
Well, the key thing is if you get sick, you know, seeking care can be beneficial. There are treatments for influenza. If you call your doctor within 2 days of the onset of symptoms, they can prescribe antiviral medications to help shorten the duration of illness. That also has been associated with reduction in the complications that sometimes result from patients with influenza, like pneumonia, sinusitis, whatnot, and can reduce the likelihood of requiring hospitalization as well. If you're beyond that two-day window or 48 hours, generally just staying hydrated, avoiding contact with other individuals because you're potentially infectious, so calling in and not going into work, not going into public places where unless absolutely necessary until mm-hmm. you're feeling better is something that's recommended. If you get worse, if you start getting short of breath, if you are really feeling very poorly, then you should seek care more quickly, a doctor if it's during the day or to the emergency room if it's after hours.
Really bad cold going around out there. These are unrelated, right? One doesn't have anything to do with the other?
So one of the challenges is this time of the year, there's a lot of viruses that circulate basically can give symptoms very similar to the flu, but maybe are less severe, like colds. And then there's another virus called RSV that causes a flu-like illness. Really, the only way to differentiate those is to do a test, which for most people is probably not necessary. Yeah. Generally, no matter what the virus that's recovering, what's infecting the patient, they'll recover without any difficulty.
One last question. How long am I infectious? If I've got that flu, and most of us know, the minute you get the flu, you go, there it is. Damn. Same way with that head cold. How long before I can have contact with people?
Yeah. A lot of it depends on how you're feeling. If you're still having symptoms, as long as you're having symptoms, you should avoid that contact and avoid going into work. But generally, within about 5 to 7 days, people are no longer infectious.
Wow, that long
particularly,
ago.
Yeah, it can be shortened if they're given treatment. The replication of the virus in normal healthy people typically isn't clear till 5 to 7 days.
That's the flu we're talking about.
Yep.
Dr. Michael Eisen, professor of infectious diseases at Northwestern. You're terrific, doctor. I sure appreciate your help today. We may call you again. I hope not. But if we have more questions along these lines, we'll reach out to you.
Always happy to.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
That's what we do. It's 2:07. This is John. We've been messing with that Google Arts and Culture app that enables you to take your picture and see who you look like in a major museum around the world. I've been strolling through the Getty Museum. 15,000 works. It's a walking tour. You can go right up and look at the pictures on your phone or computer, but the function that enables you to compare your picture to somebody else's doesn't work in Illinois and Texas. Tribune has a story. It said a woman in Lakeview neighborhood of Chicago was able to engage the app that way, but then it sort of figured out where she was, and now that function literally doesn't appear on her phone anymore. Violetta and I have tried it, and it doesn't appear on our phones under that app. That particular function.
It's another reason to go to the Broad Stop this weekend.
The Broad Stop?
That's what I said. Let's go take a road trip.
Okay, but maybe somebody could do us this favor, and I don't know if this will work, but you could download pictures of us, or we'll send you screen grabs of Violetta, me, Steve, Elif, and then if you're in Indiana or Wisconsin, and a lot of you are, would you do that thing for us and let us know what we look like? Send us a picture of us? Because I want to see what that looks like.
I mean, it's not like we'll get in trouble.
I don't think we will.
You say that like it's for our
I know.
You're soliciting this on the radio.
It does sound like, but we really shouldn't be doing it. But I think I
could go for some Merck's cheese, though,
too. They're not They're trying to protect us with the law.
I'm fine. Yeah. Listen, I'm willing to take my chances here. So anyway, I want to just call or text us if you're outstate and would do that for us. 312-981-7200. I want to talk about a possible government shutdown. We did yesterday, and you know who was really good on this was Lana Zak, the Capitol Hill correspondent at ABC News, and she joins us again on WGN. Hi, Lana. Thanks for saying hi again. How are you?
It's my pleasure, John. It's great to be with you. You know, I have to tell you, right now, it is unclear, even to those of us here at the Capitol, if there will be a deal or a government shutdown on Friday. We know that the Democratic leadership is opposing the idea of a continuing resolution. We've heard from a number of Republican senators who also say that they should be over the continuing resolutions, these piecemeal stopgap measures, and that government needs to, in fact, come to an agreement about what to do in terms of how we fund our government and what our priorities are.
Is that where the game's being played right now, though, on a 30-day extension?
It is. So there's a couple of different things that are in that. One, Republican leadership is really trying to push that forward. It might be able to pass in a continuing resolution, might be able to pass in the House. But when it comes over to the Senate, there are four independent and Republican senators who are not going to vote in favor of the bill, either because they oppose it or they're not going to be present, as is the case of John McCain. But that means that 13 Democrats are going to need to cross party lines for Republicans to be successful with that continuing resolution. And right now, it does not look like that is going to happen. So they're trying, I know, to get an actual agreement about Dreamers, child health insurance, so that they can actually pass a bill and come to a real agreement about things.
What's the president's position on the child health thing? That CHIP program has been confusing to not only me, but I think to him.
Yeah, you know, he had said initially that he opposed the short-term extension of the child health insurance program that would be part of the continuing resolution. And then Republican Senator John Cornyn clarified that it was actually not a short-term extension of CHIP. It would actually be a multi-year extension that would be included in the 30-year or in the 30-day spending stopgap measure. It's trying to make that clear. And then the White House also trying to clarify that the president is in fact now in favor of that. So you're not wrong to be a little bit confused about that. That was confusing to a lot of people today, even perhaps some residents of the White House.
And Lana, we talked about this yesterday, but one more time, what is it the Democrats are clinging to? I mean, they could come along with some version of this. What has to be in there for Democrats?
Well, they say that they have been promised by Republicans that they would come up with a solution and a long-term fix for those so-called dreamers and a path either to citizenship or some permanent status agreement for the kids or young adults who were brought to the United States as minors. So they did not make the decision to come here illegally. That decision was made for them by other adults, and they have been raised as American children by many accounts. And so they face a March deadline of deportation, potentially, after having registered with the government and making their status clear, which was part of the initiative of the Obama administration. And so there are a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, who think that that is a false bill of sale that was given to these children, saying, you have to register, let us know who you are, and we will protect you. And then when President Trump came in, his argument was that that President Obama did not have the ability to do so. It was not within his jurisdiction, and that was something that Congress should have done to give any sort of permanent status to these dreamers.
If they came back to him with the bill that was essentially what happened last Tuesday, would the president sign that? He was dissuaded from doing that later in the week. I wonder where he is right now on that.
And I have to tell you, from speaking with some of the people, the Congress people who are actually trying to come up with this legislation, they are not entirely sure of what the president will sign on to and what he won't sign on to. The president has said he has to have a border wall, that has to be part of it. The definition of what that means is elusive right now, with some Republicans saying it doesn't have to be an actual physical border. But as we have heard before with President Trump, sometimes you may think that you've got it all figured out, but until he actually signs onto it publicly, you don't really know. So they are trying to come up with a solution that that not only works for Democrats and Republicans, but also will get the White House on board.
Is John Kelly in his doghouse right now?
Well, so the backstory on that is that John Kelly spoke reportedly with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus and sort of made it sound like he was informing the president, who had not a very firm grasp on immigration policy. And we know from Steve Bannon and some other folks in the past that when that message gets out in the press, that the president doesn't tend to care for it. So we'll have to see on that one.
And there was the president then hours later saying, no, the wall is always the wall that I've described. I have not been misinformed about this all along.
Right.
Although Kelly was trying to soft pedal it that way. But you can imagine his boss doesn't take lightly or does not like that kind of language from his chief of staff.
Well, most bosses don't, to be fair. I don't think my boss would care for it if I went out and said that I was trying to teach my boss the ins and outs of what we're trying to do here. But it definitely seems like the president was trying to make it clear, as he has in the past when these sorts of things have come up, that he is the man in charge. So how that all goes into this delicate balance of trying to please President Trump and get him to sign on. Well, we heard the frustration with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday saying that they'd be happy to sign a bill or pass a bill, but they need to have one that the president signs, and right now they don't know what that would be.
Will they do that at 7 o'clock tonight?
I'm hoping that, an agreement will happen earlier rather than later. You know, I am I'm here as long as they continue debating, and the deadline is tomorrow at midnight, so we'll have to see what happens with that.
Lana Zack is a reporter from Capitol Hill for ABC News. Thanks again, Lana. Terrific. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
All right. There's that. There's that. Boy, they're both just holding their breath right now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. It just seems such an it's an unusual one because it's about very little this time.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the is it the DACA thing that's holding it up or what, you know, I mean, DACA's got wide popular support. The president says he wants it done.
Yesterday, Mitch McConnell was asked about that. And they said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to jigger? And he goes, well, we're not going to jigger it at all until we know what the jiggering is we need. We had something, and then the president changed his mind or was clearer about his intentions. So now there was Mitch McConnell going, I don't know what to do.
Well, he's saying, I don't know what the president wants.
Well, that's it.
And once we know what the president wants and will sign, we'll work on something, but we're not going to go through the motions until we do, which is a pretty amazing thing.
Why? Why do you say that?
Because you would think that the White House would by now be giving guidance saying this is what we will support. And they're on the same party, and the leader of the Senate doesn't know what to put up for a vote.
I wasn't thinking about it in those terms. I was thinking about it in, well, who should be driving this bus anyway? Maybe if the Congress comes up, both parties in both houses, if they come up with a plan they should agree to, can agree to. I understand the power of the presidency. It's the third leg on the stool, but maybe he should sign off on that. Everybody else is on page.
But they're not. I mean, the House is in, I didn't hear everything Lana just said to you, but the House is in a different position than the Senate.
I get the feeling that if they came to him with that, suppose both sides signed off again on something very similar to that which the president changed his mind on. I mean, that's Mitch McConnell. Well, now I don't know what he wants. And I'm thinking, well, the president should say, what do you want, Congress?
Right.
And that's what I'll sign.
But it's hard for the Senate. If McConnell asks his Republican senators to vote for DACA, and that's unpopular with some of their voters, you know, that puts them, that exposes them. And if he does that and then the House doesn't go along and the president doesn't sign it, then he's put his Senate members at risk for no good reason. So he's reluctant to put anything up for a vote, popular or unpopular, until he knows that everyone else is going to go for it, or at least the president's going to go for it.
There is not a person listening to this conversation who would be harmed by the president signing a bill, the DACA bill. How would it hurt you? How would that change your life? What would that do to you if the president enabled those people who are here through no fault of their own to stay here? How does that hurt you? It doesn't hurt you. There's no way that harms you.
And as you're talking, we just got a Politico just reporting now. Senate Democrats say they are confident they have the votes to block the stopgap spending bill that the House is taking up this evening.
Say that again?
The Senate Democrats say that they have enough votes to block the House plan.
Yeah, they want to bring it up tonight.
In the House. So if they approve it and it goes to the Senate, the Democrats say, no, we have enough votes to block it. The House vote will not pass the Senate.
Not today. Maybe tomorrow. Wonder what's going to happen between now and then. By the way, a text poured in. It said, the president's military pay threat is bogus. They're paid on the 1st and the 15th. Okay, but that just flies in the face of something I was reading.
Well, no, it doesn't. So if the government was going to shut down on the 14th, uh-huh, then maybe they wouldn't get their checks. But the government's going to shut down on the 19th. The idea is that chances are pretty strong that they
figure it out in 12
days. The 1st.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's that then. Well, I hope so. I hope so. It's 219. You may have a comment on all of this. The number is 312-981-7200. Also, I'm curious about the story about the National Park Service. My understanding is that the free days at national parks are going to be minimized, or that it's going to cost more to go into national parks. There's also the use of the land on national parks, which is at play. There is an advisory board the National Park Service has, and in mass, 10 of the members quit. They were all Obama appointees, and all of their terms are going to expire in a few months anyway. But they said that the administration never met with them, that the Interior Secretary, over the course of the last year, has not had a single meeting with them. And the rebuttal from the Interior Department is as scathing as you would imagine a Trump spokesperson would be. So what's happened there? One of those members that quit will join us after 2:30. This is WGN. One of our listeners in Wisconsin texted in to 312-981-7200, and they said, hey, send me your pictures. I'll use that Google Arts and Culture app, and I'll go ahead and see what you all look like. Hopefully, that'll work for them. I'm not sure if it allows that, but let's see.
I've also been doing some research on pictures I think you and Steve look like. So... Okay. I'll show you what I generate.
Okay, so this would be like a Violetta search. This is just you independently.
I found a great one for you.
It's not Dilbert, is it?
No.
It's not Waldo?
No.
You know, where's Waldo?
I actually found one for LF too, but I don't have any information on the actual artwork. It's just a picture.
The thing, too, is what if you said to somebody, hey, here's an artwork that looks exactly like you. What if it's somebody that they don't want to look like?
Well,
you're
that's...
a Reuben woman.
Rubenesque, you
yeah.
mean?
Yeah. I'm painted by Reuben.
Oh, I guess that would be Reuben. Yeah.
This guy looks mad in it. He looks just disappointed.
All right. That's what I look like to you most of the time?
No, it just.
In this picture he does?
Yeah.
Send it to me and let me see. So somebody said they're doing it in Wisconsin, but I'd like to have that conversation with you. If you're that person or somebody else who'll do that for us out of state, Illinois law doesn't allow it. Your phone knows where your Google knows where your phone is, and it does not enable the feature here in the Chicago area. But if you're listening to us in Wisconsin or Indiana and will do this for us, call, and I want to talk to you about that. 312-981-7200. You can make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's best. That's at 10, and then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 on WGN-TV. Taking care of yourself and your family is no easy task. Riverside Healthcare can help, though. With a variety of primary and specialty care providers, Riverside has just the help you need for your kids, for the whole family, for you too. With over a dozen locations, including the newest campus in Frankfurt, getting the right care at the right place and right time will make your life much easier. Learn more about the nationally recognized Riverside Healthcare at riversidehealthcare.org. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach. John, negotiations continue for budgets for the budget standoff. Oh, I wasn't supposed to read that just now. I guess that's something Steve's working on. Hey, Steve, I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
But they're still negotiating the budget standoff.
That's well played there, John Williams.
And that's how we make sausage. Ella, am I taking line one? And if so, what is the name on that? The glare is blurring out my screen. Garen, this is John. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hey, how's it going?
My name's
calling from the Kalamazoo area.
Great.
So, you know, the whole budget thing at midnight,
yeah.
Midnight Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Midnight Friday is 8 to 9 hours from now because midnight is when the day starts. I wish they would qualify and say Friday evening. You know, as opposed to, you know, because midnight Friday is when the day starts, not when the day ends.
Yeah, that could be a little confusing.
My case in point is people count down the new year, you know, to the January 1st, 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1, Happy New Year.
Right. But so when it hits midnight, it's midnight.
First second of the next day.
Yeah. So midnight Friday, is that Saturday? Is that the first stroke of Saturday morning or the first stroke of Friday morning?
So
first
midnight Friday is coming up tonight.
No, it's not.
Is in about 8 or 9 hours.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's going to be midnight Thursday, right? And then
midnight Thursday was 15 hours ago.
Is this really a big deal for you?
The midnight...
If someone says, hey, meet me midnight Thursday,
it's a big deal if I'm meeting somebody.
Has anyone ever said, meet me at midnight Thursday?
And you showed up on the wrong day. No, but I want to be.
I had an employee that came in a day late because we work third shift.
Yeah.
I said, okay, we start midnight Thursday, so they're driving Wednesday. What do you mean? You drive here Wednesday to start Thursday at midnight.
Well, there's two things here. One is be technically accurate, and the other one is say it in a way that people will understand, and those aren't always the same thing. So what is the technical... Go ahead.
I always thought that if it's qualified as in midnight Friday night, then that's the end of Friday, which really means the beginning of Saturday. But when they just say midnight, that means midnight Friday means the first second of Friday.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Friday night.
Yeah. And exactly. I've been saying, I think I've seen reporting Friday at midnight. Friday midnight. It depends on how you put it.
Yeah, tomorrow.
But what they really mean is right before Saturday starts.
Who's your favorite character on Cheers?
Probably Cliff. I'm guessing. I'm going to say Cliff,
why?
Right?
But that's exactly why. Yeah, it's a Cliff Clavin argument.
Oh, really? They've had this one before?
Thank you for that. No, it just is.
Have they?
No, I don't think so, but it just...
It sounds like one they'd have?
Yeah.
I don't want to perpetuate this argument, but a listener at 815 says Friday does not start until 12:01 a.m.
Yeah, so I've seen that too, like midnight Friday at 12:01 a.m. Saturday. Well, that's...
What happens those first 59 seconds?
Okay. I agree.
I'm going to be hanging up on you now.
Say hey, Normie.
Thanks for the phone call.
That's why the legalese always says this goes to 11:59 on such and such and such a day, or starts at 12:01 on such and such a day.
Yeah, I get your point.
Anyway.
I'm going to hang up on you now.
Yep, that's fine.
Thank you for the phone call. One quick note about that app that we don't get to use in Illinois because of our biometric use laws, and that's the arts and culture function that Google has. You can get the app for free, and it enables you to tour artworks and museums all around the world. It's really a cool thing anyway. But millions of people literally have suddenly decided to use a feature on it where you take a picture of you and then it finds a picture that you look like in any of these museums. And it's really pretty cool. It doesn't work in Illinois, but there's a new app called Violetta will look it up for you on her own. She sent me, Steve, and Elif pictures of what we look like based on her assessment and her perusal of these art museums. We will post the side-by-side screen grabs right after the show on my Facebook page. I'm King John.
Wait a minute.
And
do you know which one you are, Steve?
Well, I'm the girl, I hope.
He is so not going to like this. Elif looks like the girl, I think. It's a lovely lady.
Yeah.
I see why she has the one of me, the pointy features, the angular face.
Why do you look like the egg-headed guy?
But the mop on your top is hilarious.
That's me?
That's you,
my
friend.
Yeah, you're the dark-haired guy with the tall collar.
We'll post it on King John's Facebook page, and you will be glad you looked at it right after 3 o'clock. So what happened? We have this National Park Service Board, and the story is that several members, maybe 10 now by one count, have all quit. They were Barack Obama appointees, but they no longer want to be on it, in part because they said the Interior Secretary never met with them. Gretchen Long joins us. She resigned her membership, which goes back to, I think, 2000. Well, you tell me, Gretchen. You're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hello, John. I'm fine. How are you?
Terrific. You started when?
Right. We started in 2010. So we've been working together as a board for the last 7 years. And we think we did some really good work and helpful work for the National Park Service, which is our only objective. We're all citizens, and we bring different backgrounds and different areas of expertise, and we've been working together to try to make recommendations and offer advice and guidance on kind of broad policy issues and how to be a 21st century National Park Service. And that's what we've been working on for 7 years.
You've had a career in conservation and the environment. You chaired the National Parks Conservation Association. You're on the National Outdoor Leadership School. You chair the Land Trust Alliance, the National Council. You serve on the board of Nature Bridge. You have a previous business career, and I'm reading from your bio, a graduate of the Harvard Business School. So it's a nice marriage of business and the environment. And I understand, though, why a new administration wants their people representing their views on various boards. You don't deny them that, do you?
Oh, I agree with you entirely, John. Every administration charts its own course, and so will this administration. But there is value to understanding and listening to what has been done before and see what parts of it you might want to sustain and what changes you might want to make. And that's what we asked the secretary, we the board, and Tony Knowles, the chairman of the board, tried to get and failed to get the secretary's attention. that we might come and talk with him about what we've done and the role of the advisory board, because quite frankly, I'm not sure that the secretary has been as clearly aware of the role of the advisory board as might be valuable. So we wanted to go over that. It's a public process. The advisory board's been in existence since 1935. Not only do we offer advice and an independent perspective, but we're also the only group prescribed by law to determine national historic landmarks.
Do you are you bipartisan? I know that Obama.
We are bipartisan, yeah. And I frankly think currently I'm an independent, but the whole effort was bipartisan. And I have found in America people love their national parks, and it's beyond partisanship. It's not a partisan issue typically.
So
our national parks.
You would advise them on things like what, for instance, on we've been hearing that either the cost to go to national parks will be increased or that there will be fewer free days to see the national parks. What advisory role would you all have to play in that?
Well, I have heard that, too, just through the news, as you. That's getting slightly down in the weeds, but not necessarily so. We probably, had we been engaged, and I take note that they asked, they'd set up a separate committee to look at that, that we might have had some questions about raising the fees, feeling that we've spent the last several years trying to reach out to a broader America, reach out to youth, reach out to the millennials, and get their engagement. And these are the people who would find a steep increase in price an obstacle to visiting the park. So we think it's a bad signal.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's really not the way to meet the maintenance backlog. There is a huge maintenance backlog, and it's showing. You can see the wear and tear in the parks. But I don't think selecting 17 icon parks to carry this burden is the right way to do it.
What tipped?
But we were never asked.
What you all have been on this for years. The president has been in office for almost a year, and then all of a sudden we hear that everybody walks off en masse. What prompted that specifically?
I think we just felt that we were so ignored. And there was just so little interest and so little respect for the work that had been done that it was time for us to retire. And we also knew that our terms will be up this spring in May of 2018. And they will at that time, as the new administration should, put in their own new people. So we really wanted to make the statement that we're concerned that currently the ideals and measures that we had tried to help come about in the National Park Service were being ignored, and that bad things were happening. And one of the bad things that happened was that one of our efforts was to be sure that science, including climate change, was taken into consideration when the Park Service makes management decisions. And we got that enacted, or the department did. And Secretary Zinke rescinded that. And that concerned us a lot.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Let me just read to you, though, what the Associate Deputy Secretary for the Interior Department, a guy named Todd Willens, said. He said about you and your colleagues, "We welcome their resignations and would expect nothing less than quitting from members who found it convenient to turn a blind eye to women being sexually harassed at national parks." What is that all about?
Well, first of all, the advisory board never, ever heard anything about this issue. We now know through the news that there is a substantial issue of concern of women being sexually harassed. But that was never brought up in the forum, which is a public forum, by the way, and probably this issue was under private review. It just was an issue that never came up, and it really wouldn't be because it's a management issue. And we were really the group that was talking policy and ideas and not getting into management.
He also said this. I know you know it, and you knew I was going to just go over this with you, but this is their sort of counter to their rebuttal, if you will, to your departure. Mm-hmm. It is patently false to say the department has not engaged the board when as recently as January 8th, we were working with the board to renew their charter, schedule a meeting, and fill vacancies. The board traditionally meets at the end of each year, and the secretary rarely attends. However, we were working with them to renew the charter and hold a meeting in the coming weeks. Is that true?
That is absolutely dishonest. I don't know who the them to which they refer means, but no member of the advisory board, including the chairman, who would have been the most likely person to be contacted, heard anything in January at all about anything. So I don't know why they would say that. It concerns me. I want to say it's a lie, but I will say it's a lie. None of us were contacted. So the them to which they refer, I don't know who they mean, is probably internal. But they actually say we were working with the board, and they were not.
They said this, again from the Associate Deputy Secretary of the Interior, the department is happy to report that we have a number of individuals who have expressed interest in joining the board, and we will now fast-track filling these new vacancies with people who are actually dedicated to working with the department to better our national parks.
Well, I hope they do fill the vacancies with people who are actually dedicated to working with the department, because this group of colleagues that I've worked with, scientists, educators, political folks, mayors of cities, professors, finance people, myself, I've never seen a group who learned as much and cared as much about our national parks as they. And if you want to talk about truly dedicated, this group has been. If they can find more people, as they should, who want to give their voluntary time free to work, and it's a lot of work, to dedicated to our national parks, that's terrific. Bravo.
Last sentence. Their hollow and dishonest political stunt should be a clear indicator of the intention of this group. So the fact that
I found the whole press release disgusting and concerning, because it is, first of all, it's just trying to degrade us as a group, and it's a dishonest presentation. They also mentioned that we failed to mention in the centennial celebration, for which I was chair of the centennial committee, the extensive work of private companies, which we've never not mentioned, but what they said, because we had private companies and public interests, we had over 200 public groups and organizations that participated as partners with us in the centennial celebration. And we also had private companies. We wanted them all. Partnerships was what it was all about. And the fact that they would falsely bring this up is almost ridiculous.
I'll repeat what you said. I think everybody listening to this conversation, Republican or Democrat, feels the same way. If the president wants to appoint his own people, great. Let's hope if they're conservatives or if they're, you know, polka dotted, it doesn't matter. Let's get people in there that care about the parks, care about the environment, believe in science, understand climate change and how all of these things are connected, and they do their best to preserve the parks and make them accessible to the people. I don't care what their political party is. I also don't think you deserve, if there is a political difference, the sort of butt kicking that they wanted to give you all on the way out the door after 8 years of service. That sounds ridiculous to me.
Well, I appreciate your summarizing it that way, because that's the way we see it, too. Very much so.
Two quick texts from my listeners. John, the national parks are in the worst shape they've ever been in. That's from 815 and from 630. I'm from Chicago. I work in Florida, though, as an Everglades National Park, some sort of employee there. Entrance prices mm-hmm. have been raised while attendance is right. definitely declining. Well, that's too bad, too. Well, they got their work cut out for them, maybe. So what's next for you, then? I'll let you go here. But, Gretchen, what's next for Gretchen Long?
Well, I'm going to continue to support our national parks. I love them. And I will do what I can, not as a member of the advisory board, but in other ways. I work in the conservation community as a volunteer on a board level. But I'll have to say this has been a very robust experience, and it will be hard to supplant it. Except that, and I know I'm talking to those who agree, the mission of the National Park Service is so great, and the people, really most of the members of the 20,000 person staff of the Park Service are so dedicated, and they're being so roiled right now with chaos of reorganization and lack of clarity as to the future, and I hurt for them.
I'm trying to remember, was it the New York Times or Washington Post? One of the major newspapers is doing a series on how the changing of the guard, a Democratic administration to a Republican administration, how it has been upsetting to various departments. And the first piece that they did, I believe, is when the Department of Agriculture, which might strike mm-hmm. you as a bit of a yawn, say, but then you say, no, that involves children, food, school lunches, mm-hmm. to say nothing of our agriculture and how we feed ourselves as a nation. And the sort of disregard that the incoming administration had in the agriculture department for the outgoing one, the exchange of ideas, procedures, and plans, just a sort of handoff, was stunning to all the people involved on at least the one side. And it sounds like the national parks are at some point here going through the same sort of whiplash.
I think so, too. I think you phrased it very well. And the disregard is amazing. And, you know, one of the things we worked on, I didn't mention, is we try to get the next generation involved and new partnerships, as well as increased private philanthropy and other things, was to bring about the awareness that most people, when they think of their national parks, they think of Yellowstone or Yosemite or even Grand Teton National Park, which I live near. And those are wonderful, big natural treasures. But two-thirds of the national park system are cultural and historic. And we worked very hard to reinforce a recognition of the breadth of the Park Service. And I hope that this is not lost in this next period.
Gretchen, I have not been to a national park west of the Mississippi. If I start, I know, just see, get back up on your feet now.
You have to change that, John.
If I start, where should I start? Give me one.
West of the Mississippi?
Yes.
Well, I'd go through, I'd probably come to Wyoming first, even though I live there.
I see
Yellowstone and yeah. Grand Teton National Park.
All right.
Which has had the greatest visitation in its history this past year.
Oh, good.
Which is both wonderful and sometimes a problem.
I was just going to say, or not good, yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the wonderful things about the National Park Service. They're the only agency in the government that has the dual role of trying to invite the visitor to enjoy the resource and at the same time steward that resource so it is well preserved and not hurt. It's a huge job, that dual effort.
I'll come see you sometime, Gretchen.
The visitation gets up pretty high on places like Yellowstone, and we start to shake our heads.
And
Yosemite in California is great. The Grand Canyon is great. All the big icon parts are great. But on your way, I would stop at the smaller, particularly coming across from the Mississippi, the smaller, more historical and cultural parks.
I got
They're pretty wonderful. Like Custer's Last Stand is a great, great park.
I said just one. Okay, so I'll do Yellowstone and Grand Tetons to start and then farm my way out there. What a pleasure to meet and visit with you, Gretchen Long. Thank you for your time
today.
John,
I appreciate it.
It's good to hear your voice. Hopefully similar voices will take your place. She's resigned as a member of the National Park Service Board. Anna DeVlantis just strolled into the studio. We were talking about national parks. Have you been to any national parks?
Recently, no, I have not. But I would love to. I want to take a trip to one. Ugh. Have you been?
No.
No.
And I feel like, oh my God, John, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm,
you live
right.
in America. We have these great things. John.
Well, you know, you're right. You hear people from overseas come and say, wow, I've just been to the Grand Canyon or something. You need to take a trip there. You need to see these things.
Bing, bing, bing. Here they come. Yellowstone, Grand Canyon. Go to the Badlands. Visit Glacier National Park first because the glaciers are going to be gone by 2020. John, Southwest Utah, Zion, Bryce Canyon, Arches, Canyonland, all within a half day of each other. Custer National Monument, John, is very moving.
Oh, that just inspires you to want to go, doesn't it?
What's going on, big boy?
Nothing. Good to see you.
Who are you?
I'm Ro. I just had some. I had some work done. So
Brian Noonan, yes, wearing my favorite color, purple today.
Oh. You know, every time Brian comes in here, it's a different color conversation. Like he had that pink bow tie on one day, and he's rather dapper.
Well,
in his
you know,
own
I try.
Way.
I like to dress it up.
Yeah,
he's not a man afraid to take chances in the wardrobe department. And,
I told you,
like
I thought
him.
This was very conservative. It's just purple, just a little purple cord.
It's got a little pop to it.
Sure.
So, give me the headline today. What are you guys doing?
Oh my word! Well. Well, we're going to have Peter Roskerman to talk about not only he'll be taking a victory lap on the tax law that is now in place. You saw the president talking about it just this hour in Pennsylvania about the impact it's had. And Peter Roskam, of course, big part of that getting it passed. But then also what's going on with the government shutdown? Will the government shut down by tomorrow night? And how are things going there in Washington? Mm-hmm. Amazon, guys, are you excited about the prospect that we're on the top 20 list?
You know, it's better than being 21st. We're in the top 20.
That's
no,
right.
We're still in the game. Everybody's like, oh, we'll never get it. Well, you don't know that until you try.
You don't.
So we'll talk to Cranes and break that down, see what that's all, what the impact will be if we do get it, and what we're willing to give up to get Amazon here.
Yeah, that which is another great piece of the puzzle there. What do you give up?
Too much is what you give up.
Yeah, so we'll break that down, see what it actually would mean in terms of numbers too, and and where we might be in amongst the 20, what the advantages are and disadvantages. Did you see the Tribune? They said our one advantage is weather. And you wouldn't think of Chicago having an advantage in the weather department, but they said because of the hurricanes and
right.
the
one of them, affecting isn't one of them
our coasts,
Miami or South Florida?
Miami, Houston, Dallas.
I'm not putting 85,000 jobs in
South.
Yeah, in Dallas, it's too hot there. Miami's going to get blown away or sunk by the rising tide.
And here, they'll freeze for a couple weeks and then they'll thaw and everything will be
fine. Be good to go.
Yeah. So we have a little bit cold. So
have a really good
show,
you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.